this hymn, For the Fruit of All Creation, is one, yesterday, those of you that are here at 9 o'clock, I showed you this hymnal, Songs for Gospel People, which is this wonderful, wonderful alternative songbook that is a supplementary songbook you can use in your parishes, that's inexpensive, done in Canada. And this, I told you that some of the good things they do in terms of the duplications in the LBW is that they have, you know, some of the great words, and then to the singable tunes. And we've done this in my parish a lot, too, all through the night, because although this tune is probably one of the best crafted tunes in terms of composition and stuff of new tunes in the hymnal, it's quite difficult. It's very pretty, and maybe your choirs or something will want to sing it sometime, but I think for most people in the pew, it's difficult to sing. These words are, and we'll sing it the way it is in Songs for Gospel People, so you need to change one word in the second line of the first verse. We'll sing for the gifts to every nation. That's the way it is in Songs for Gospel People. And nice and inclusive, and that's what we like to do. And that's the only thing. The author of this hymn, F. Pratt Green, has authored many of the hymns in our LBW. He's English and writes absolutely wonderful words. Do any of you have in your pews the thing Augsburg published called Songs for the People? It's a gold book. It's one that has Help, O Lord, and Amigos de Cristo, and Born in Cry, and all that. There's a wonderful hymn in there called God is Here, and we, God's people, meet to offer prayer and praise. That's also an F. Pratt Green words. They're wonderful words. Looks like there's a whole bunch of them in the LBW, and I think you'd find that a lot of hymns that you like a lot are words have been written by him. Just at our Synod Assembly a couple weeks ago, Jerry Evenrude from the ELCA Worship Office was out doing music for us. I think many of you have experienced Jerry in one way or another. It's an experience. He's also been at Holden many, many times. And Jerry keeps in touch with all these people. And F. Pratt Green is now in his 80s, but still going strong. And Jerry was recently at a meeting where he received an award for all his hymn writing. And his real first name is Fred. Jerry went up to him and asked him, as Jerry is wont to do to people, and said, I'm real curious why you've always gone by F. Pratt Green. And the guy said, and I can't do a good English accent, but Jerry said, he said, oh, my dear, would you want to go through life as Fred P. Green? So on that note, we'll sing his wonderful hymn. It's a beautiful, beautiful hymn, and it has three verses.
Thank you.
Isn't that great? I love the end of that. For the wonders that astound us, for the truths that still confound us, most of all that love has found us. Thanks be to God. Michael Pellet might want to argue with the first line of the second verse, but in terms of last night's session and the Protestant work ethic. But at the same time, we also know that God's will is done and our work well done. We're looking at making things new, and we're in 2 Corinthians. We ended at the end of verse 6 in chapter 4 yesterday. And we'll look closely at the end of 4 and then flip to 5, flip back again a little bit. Once again, we have in 4 verse 7, the theme of our whole studying of this year at Holden 2, that we have this treasure in earthen vessels to show that the transcendent power belongs to God and not to us. And then here Paul goes and talks about the ways in which these earthen vessels get buffeted about, right? You know, that we are afflicted in every way but not crushed, perplexed but not driven to despair, persecuted but not forsaken, struck down but not destroyed. And that matches what we've been saying, isn't it, about the fact that God, the treasure we have is the selves in the new life that God gives us, and that all kinds of things might happen to the earthen vessels. They might even need to get made new, like we're talking about today. They can also get buffeted about a lot. But just think of all those, the way Paul talks about what's happening in an exterior way does not destroy what's inside. You can be afflicted, huh? But not crushed. Perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. And struck down, but not destroyed. And wonderful how those are, you know, what happens outside, doesn't it? So he says, then always carrying in the body the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be manifested in our bodies. That, of course, is Paul once again saying that where does our life begin? It begins in the cross, right? That in the putting to death of the old self so the new self can be renewed, all of that is he's talking about carrying that proclamation around. For while we live, he says, we are always being given up to death for Jesus' sake, so that the life of Jesus may be manifested in our mortal flesh. So death is at work in us, but life in you. And so in the proclamation of the cross of Christ that Paul's doing, remember we talked about this is what he's doing to the Corinthians back there when he talks about the fact that he doesn't need a resume and 5 references, that the proclamation of the gospel of the cross of Christ done in the church of Corinth then gives the living God in the presence of living people, and that becomes then the living presence of God in the world. And Paul's talking about here that life connection with each other that we make, that God allows us to make out of our renewed selves, out of this treasure in these earthen vessels. And in that life connection, all kinds of things can happen. Even death, Paul's saying. But it still doesn't destroy or take away any of the wonderful renewed self that God has given us in Christ. But life in you, he says. So he says, so since we have the same spirit of faith as the one who wrote, I believed and so I spoke, it's from the Psalms, so we too believe and so we speak, knowing that the one who raised the Lord Jesus will raise us also with Jesus and bring you into Jesus' presence. We're all together, you know. All of these things, it doesn't matter what happens. And in this living presence of of the gospel, in people of God, we are all together. For it is all for your sake, so that grace extends to more and more people, it may increase thanksgiving to the glory of God. And that's such a wonder. Once again, you know, the glory that just keeps growing that Paul's been talking about in this passage. But, you know, it's another thing that we do, I think, in our Christian communities. And we forget the fact how God's grace and love and mercy and blessing is not a fixed amount, you know. When God gave grace in Jesus, it wasn't so much grace. so that everybody, you know, when you come in then to into the community of the faithful, you get your little chunk of grace, and I've got my little chunk of grace, and somebody else has got theirs, and it's just so much to go around. No, that isn't true about the grace and blessing of God. This is something I say in my congregation whenever we have a baptism. Said that the blessing here today is for this baptized person. And by bringing that person into our community, it doesn't divide our blessing, does it? It multiplies it. You know, the more folk that are in the grace of God that are around means there's more grace around. And that's what Paul's saying. It's, you know, it's not a matter of dividing stuff so that it gets diminished by the more people there are. The more people there are, the more grace there is, you know, the more fun it is. And so it increases thanksgiving, Paul says, to the glory of God. So then Paul says, so we do not lose heart. And once again, that word heart, you know, which Paul's talking about in terms of the whole person and that renewed self, that treasure that we have in these earthen vessels, that doesn't go away. Though our, then this is, you know, this is the wonderful verse. No, our outer nature is wasting away and our inner nature is being renewed every day. Every day. Who are some of the very, I know who I'll say, who are the very best people in my congregation and in every congregation I've served that I like the best are the about over 70 crowd. Yay! Good to hear that. And one, the over 70 crowd, I think you kind of know something about the outer nature wasting away a little bit. I know my mother does. And because she complains about it all the time. And sometimes in very painful ways. I'm not making light of the aging process or what happens to people when they get older. Some of us that are not over 70 know about that too. But my point is that especially these people that have been in the church all their lives, I have found that for the most part, there's very little that goes on that phases these folk. And also, having sat in the pews and heard the gospel, you know, day in and day out, sometimes they haven't heard the gospel. I know of one woman in one parish who kept coming out to her pastor every Sunday and saying, "That was a very nice talk, but it wasn't the gospel." And well, she just said it every Sunday. "Thank you, Pastor, for your nice talk." And finally, he went and visited with her and said, "You know, what do you mean?" She said, "I come to church to hear about Jesus, you know. And it's helpful to hear about all these ways in which we can make our lives better, and that's helpful too. But, you know, we can do that at other times also. And then for that 1 hour on Sunday morning, I want to hear about Jesus." And that was her basic way of putting it. And according to her, he didn't get it. But the great thing also is that what I say about those people is they kind of have perfect pitch for the gospel. You know, all the stuff, that outer nature stuff that's so important to the rest of us as we're still struggling through other things, you know. How are our jobs going, and what do our houses look like, and did we get the car washed, and, you know, are we going to be able to pay the bills, and are we going to, you know, how are our teenagers doing, and all those things that really can, I mean, I'm not saying those aren't important, they're very important, but they do sometimes get in the way from just sort of getting down to the basics. And when you don't have to worry about that stuff much anymore, you can just sort of sit back and enjoy it. And I have found that the older people do, they just say, Not many changes faze them. They can put up with a lot of the changes happening in the church right now much, much more easily than middle-aged people can. You know, they want to know, and they're up front, and they want to know, and they say, "Why are we doing the new version of the Lord's Prayer, huh?" Explain it to them, and they say, "Oh, that makes sense." all those things, and so they're wonderful. And so It has to do with, we talked about big theological words and stuff, and it has to do with what we'd call Lutheran theology, the process of sanctification, our growth in grace, that blessing said over you at your confirmation that would happen. And the blessing we receive always from people who have been in the faith a long time is that we know that growth in grace does indeed happen. And that every day, as our inner nature, as Paul says, is being renewed, we do grow and change, and that we also become more fixed in God's peace for our lives. And then Paul has, you know, for this slight momentary affliction is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison, because we look not to the things that are seen, but to the things that are unseen. For the things that are seen are transient, but the things that are unseen are eternal. And, you know, that also has to do with life with God after this life on earth. But I think Paul there is also talking about, as he's been talking about through this whole passage, about that it's really important to pay attention to what's going on inside of us. It's important to pay attention to our connection with God, which may not be identified by anything external. It's important to pay attention, as we've talked about in these days, to the ways, not the ways, what kind of programs we're doing in our parishes, or, you know, what the thing looks like, or how many new members we have, or how big our Sunday school is, but to those inside things, the unseen things, about how are people relating to each other? Are we nurturing one another in life and faith? Are we compassionate not just to the world out there, but to one another? You know, do we have a life here that welcomes others? You know, is the household of faith that we live in hospitable to anybody? And those aren't always external things. I mean, you might make your parish accessible to physically disabled people. But having the ramp up the front steps isn't necessarily going to make them welcome, is it? If they know that there are people there who can be named like the rest of you and know that sense when they get wheeled up the ramp, you know, then that's what's important. That's the key thing. Anyway, that gets us to the end of chapter 4. Any comments, questions? Yeah.
I have a feeling that in this age that we're living in and moving into the ecological age, that people in our pews and people who aren't in our pews are going to have an increasing amount of difficulty with this concept of earthen vessels and the importance of the inside over the outside, the internal versus the external, and God as transcendent power, and so forth, because the ecological age is really beginning to not only take seriously, but see God fully present in the earthen vessel, the external, the God not as something which is beyond, and I realize you're not saying that.
You're not saying
at all.
That right.
No, this
yeah,
is not
yeah,
a
no,
critique
yeah,
of what you're
yeah,
saying.
No, yeah, but I understand what you're saying.
It's a challenge for us as the a Bible community to be able to present this in this ecological age and say that everything fits together, that
yes.
all things work together
exactly.
for good, and so forth, and really link the external and internal and celebrate the earthen vessel not as something which we can kind of forget because it's withering and the important thing is what's decaying,
yeah.
the important thing is what is not. We need to begin to take very seriously and embrace the decaying part. It's a real challenge, I think.
Yes, and that's a very, very good point. And I'm not saying that. That's why we're talking about the earthen vessel this time, because the earthen vessel is extremely important. And making it be what's intended and what connects with the important thing is that it connects with the inside. You know, that it not be false, which we have had, I think, to a certain extent. And you know, and one interesting thing I thought about is we do live though in a time that wants to break out of that physical world and wants the spiritual to always be transcendent, to always be... The whole New Age movement's about that, folks. You know? It's about this stuff doesn't... I don't need to pay attention to all this. And it also means I can have anything I want because it's not important. It's...
Out-of-body stuff is very much part of that New Age.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So crack and smash the earthly vessel because it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter, right, yeah. And all that stuff. And also, that's also true of very conservative Christianity, where all that matters is your spiritual life. That's the only thing that matters at all. So all this other stuff doesn't You can't make those connections. So that's a very important point, because we as... this is most of our Lutheran Christians. I think we need to embrace our own theology at that point, you know, because we're very earthly, you know. Lutherans are, we're stuck in the dirt here. Luther did that for us. And we need to pay attention to that and, as you say, keep that ecological connection. And the, and that's the important word that you've used, is ecology, which is literally means the relation of all things together.
Could you take another run at that? Because I think whatever you two communicated to each other and agreed on, just one.
Okay. Can you ask your question a little more at all? Or just...
Well, I'm not sure about this inner-outer connectedness that you were talking about. In terms of the vessel, we got to take care of the decay. I don't know what that means.
Well, Dick, why don't you go ahead?
If we're able to if we're able to function with a mindset that says that what really matters is this invisible, unseen, internal spirit, which is connected with the invisible, unseen, eternal God, with transcendent power, then we can move in one of two directions. Either we can begin to see through the unseen all that which can be seen, and that is an Eastern approach, or to move through that which can be seen to that which is not seen, to connect those two. But what we do is we divide them. That's the other way we can move with that kind of mindset, is to say that this earthen vessel we have is actually kind of like a garbage can, which we will fill up and then we'll throw it away and we'll move on to another place called heaven, another time called the future, someplace other than here.
So the only people are like a Shirley MacLaine who gets this long golden cord or silver cord?
Well, I would be reluctant to comment on her because I'm not that familiar with her, but a lot of us have the feeling that life, this earthen vessel, is disposable. We use it and throw it away. When in fact it turns out that it is our lifelong womb. It is where we live and move and have our being, and this is where forgiveness and justification and sanctification and ultimately our whole eternal destiny is linked with it. Does that help?
Well, that helps.
Nancy is talking about the same thing. I defer to you, Nancy, on that.
I'll defer to Carol. Right?
Well, I think probably maybe we need to remind each other a very simple thing, and that is that earthen vessel it's like a metaphor that can stand for a lot of things. And maybe, a couple of people have said this over the last couple of days, Nancy, that what is the earthen vessel? I mean, is this a flask that you find up in the mine, or is this a person? You know, that's, I think you have to say, the earthen vessel is that which contains our life, and that means our bodies, or it might mean any number of things. One of the things that I was thinking of when you were talking about the older people in your congregation is that I have also some older people, and I was thinking that how do you get that embrace of both the spiritual and the recognition of the value of the vessel? And suddenly I remember the story about Borghild Skarvold once more, and Borghild Skarvold is approaching 90, and a couple of years ago she was really in a lot of pain. She's had three hip replacements. And I said, I kidded with her and said, Borghild, I don't know too many people with three hips. I mean, you could work this in a sideshow. But Borghild got her third hip, and she was getting back to feeling pretty good, and she was talking about what it was like to get old and find yourself in this position of being really diminished in your ability to get around. And sort of telling me all about that and explaining to me what it was like to grow older. And then she said, I said, how do you have such a happy attitude? And Borghild says, when I wake up in the morning, I just say, wow, here you are again.
Yeah, right.
And so that's a sort of embracing of the vessel.
Yeah, that's right. That's great. And that's it, And well, yeah.
jump.
Well, I just wanted to take exception to something you said about the New Age. Unless I totally misunderstand what we've been calling the New Age, I see the New Age as embracing Eastern thought.
It does embrace Eastern thought, yes.
Which is also involved with seeing the whole system as whole.
Not the body, though. Not the physical world.
Okay, but what I wanted to do to tie this together is I think if we totally dismiss people that are into the New Age thinking, which we're almost tending to do a little bit, not just in this conversation, but in other ways, then we may be missing a real important chance to connect with those people, because I think they're looking for this. They're just doing it in a real different way.
I think they are. I think that what we do have to offer is what people are looking, what the gospel does have to offer, especially in terms of, the whole system connection is important. And when I made that comment about the New Age, it was just, this is what that is.
But I've heard, is it just you?
Yeah, right.
A lot of people, Christians, Lutherans, whatever, just dismiss the New Age as another weirdo thing that's come along. But I think they're going to miss out on relating to those people this very thing. And it really isn't that far off from what they're looking for. And if we can't articulate that, then we're going to miss out on a lot.
I agree. And it gets back to what we were talking about yesterday in terms of not making assumptions about people, that you have to hear what they're saying. And so when we have a movement like we do, the New Age movement, which is a significant one, by the way, it's not to be dismissed, and it isn't going to go away. And it has a lot to do with the frustrations of the physical world, I think, in our current time.
Seeking after more spiritual connections.
Yes, right. When you're confronted with, especially when you look basically at, Shirley McLean notwithstanding, but at the age group that's into New Age stuff, it's 30s, 40, people in the 30s and 40s for the most part, mostly professionals, mostly business people, that are confronted daily and with the kinds of frustrations, more than frustrations in our world. When you're continually bombarded by, which happens to us, by the threat of nuclear war, by the destruction of the environment, by all of these things that we talk about a lot here in this place and in our churches, a lot of people can't bear to take that in. So let's just chuck it and soar off onto a higher plane of consciousness and forget about it. And, that's a really crass way to put it. But we need to pay attention to what's happening in our world that's causing people to want to do that. And where we're stuck as Lutherans, like I said, is right here in these bodies, where we are every morning, in where this all happens, right here, in our, the earthen vessel is any place the living God is present, which is in each of us, in this place, in our congregations, in our relationships, every place we are, God is present. And we don't just go there sort of by spiritually hopping over, do we? We bring our bodies, right? And we need to help people pay attention to that. And we need to pay attention then also to what's happening in our society that's wanting people to escape the whole physical world, essentially, to do this. Is that all connecting now with all this stuff? Yeah.
Very helpful.
Yeah. When you say something like how you like the elderly in your church, I look at this whole thing as somewhere, haven't we as Christians, there's a couple of generations in there that have really fallen down on communicating the gospel to others or evangelizing. We can tell they're all searching for something, and I feel like I would say probably the 40 to 60-year-old, someplace in there, I think we've sort of fallen down with the message.
Yeah, we have, and I think
make it relevant.
And part of it is because we want to do it. That's another breaking an old vessel again. we want to do it the way it's always been done, and the reality is the way it's been done doesn't work.
Right, because the youngsters today are more intelligent than they.
Well, yeah, and we haven't learned. We have to learn new ways to articulate our faith.
Yeah.
period.
And why do we have such a struggle with that? I mean,
it's difficult. It's hard work. It's hard work. Yes, yes.
It brings out something that I heard last week in a synodical conference of fellow from Chicago ELCA handling aging issues. Talked about the fact that maybe in our programs we should be encouraging the elderly who are still healthy. We have this picture of the elderly as being sick and lonely, but a lot of them aren't. A lot of them get to be 85 and they're still really healthy, alert individuals, and they want to be involved. And he was suggesting, at least, that we develop some sort of program of contemplation, which maybe would get a little bit at what you're talking about, to start thinking about our journey. I don't know. That maybe there's a need for some special programs for that group.
But anytime you think of special programs for any group, what's the first thing to do? Ask them.
As you get older, you don't want to be in a group by yourself. You want to be with the younger people.
That's the key, especially if you're healthy and
Yeah, right. That's right. Yeah.
Intergenerational.
Yeah, right.
But I think there's a lot to be learned from
those older people.
There's a lot to be learned from those older people, and we don't tap that resource. We just kind of put them out to pasture.
They don't want to advise
how to do it.
Yeah. Well, we're in a group in our church where we're the oldest couple, and we have couples all the way down to little babies. And we suggested once that maybe we'd move to a different group. They wouldn't let us because they wanted us in that group, and we all like it, because you're varied. You don't have one outlook.
Well, yeah, that's right. And see, the wonderful thing about one thing the world wants to do and that we've picked up in the church is saying that everybody that's 10 years old needs to be with everybody else who's 10 years old. Everybody who's 25 needs to be with everybody else who's 25. And we've done that all over the place, and it's stupid. If you learn nothing else at Holden Village, you'll learn that concept's stupid. Huh?
But we're not without our temptation to want to do that.
Oh, of course not, because it's easier, isn't it?
Right.
Well, that's right.
That's our stereotype, too.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Put everybody by the chronological age, which has very little to do with it.
And very, very little at all.
It's a ridiculous concept, but nobody admits it and goes right along.
But all the churches have their singles group, their young teens group.
You gotta be so small that you don't need that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That becomes better. That becomes really helpful. But what it's getting at, this whole thing we've been talking about, because what you have to do to not do the easy thing, of course, means you do a harder thing. And what you might have to do is, one, sit down and talk to each other about who you are in terms of a community. You might have to sort of be like Quakers, and sit around for the Spirit for a couple years. Wait for the Spirit and just see what happens. That's really scary in churches. But sometimes you just have to do that. And just, throw out the committees and the clubs and the whole thing and have a few meals together and come to church and then see what happens.
This is what Fritz Norstedt, who has been here many times, advocated. Just have a moratorium.
Yeah.
Just not have anything for a while. And then don't let anything, but not even Sunday school. Then let that in. What you feel was necessary. Let the young, the teenagers work with the elderly, go out and do missions with them, clean house, shop. Have fun with that age group. Tie them all together again.
Yeah.
But don't do it by, a certain age you've reached that. But mix them all up. And then let that what's important.
That's
Unless,
right.
There is also a committee on the whole national network. I'm one of, I never get to the conventions because I'm not here. But that's the older people. And Paul Moe's one, his wife. And this particular group is supposed to go around to your churches and your community and see that you have not shelved these people, either racially, age-wise. Be sure that aged people are also on your church boards. They haven't just been put back here and inoperable pretty soon. So somebody in your community is supposed to be doing that. to see that they're equally represented and that it fits in all categories.
Nancy?
But that's one group where they are working to see that they're not just cast out.
Bill and then Hertha.
Speaking as a young elderly.
Very young. Billy.
Yeah, I would say really the only difference between the young and the old is that the older you get, the sooner you run out of gas. That's the only difference I have perceived.
Yep. Hertha.
A good vehicle to use for reexamining is declare a year of jubilee.
You all know what she's talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sabbath.
They never did it, you know, back there when God told them to, so we might as well pick up something good from the old covenant, right? Yeah.
It works.
Yeah. Did you do it in your parish?
No, I did it in my 50th year.
Great. You did it for yourself.
For myself.
Great. It's a really...
It would be funny to think of... And we always think of little kids as being the change in the congregation. It would be funny if that really came in a new recognition of the elderly. That I was thinking, playing last year with the idea that it would be nice to replace elections to church councils with casting lots. And you'd wipe out all the old power structure because you'd certainly get another configuration in. I was thinking in my congregation, if I had just the luck of dice, even, you know, that I'd get a whole bunch of people that were in the elderly block bracket. And that what that would mean is that you could no longer have council meetings on Monday or Tuesday nights. I mean, you'd have to have it Sunday morning or Saturday noon or something. That'd be great.
I think that I'm troubled by one thing, though, that I hear in that and that I'm beginning to hear in the secular world, and that is that youth are beginning to resent the elderly in a way, and that way is that they're beginning to feel that the elderly are going to begin to debilitate their lifestyle in some future. That's what they're starting to be told, that the elderly are growing at the rate of 1,400 a day, and that what's life going to be like for us when we have to take care of all these old people, and we're a smaller and smaller group coming along to do that, and beginning to resent all the programs that we're putting in for the elderly. We have senior discounts for just about everything now. And
yes.
There's something to look forward to.
By the time some of us get there, there'll be too many of us and they won't have discounts anymore because they can't afford it.
Well, that's in a way what they're talking about. And so I would caution that we also at least mitigate our move toward the elderly a little bit to thinking that we better not... abrogate our need to stay in touch with the youth. And I think what you're saying is that whole vessel, we better keep track of the new ones that we're putting together as well as the old ones that are decaying.
Diane?
I'm in education, and a little of the thing, a little of this is kind of scary in terms of, we heard a psychologist talk to us at one time, and he was talking about how it is so different to the generations are so different. And as he's been studying it, he's found that the generation gap has shrunk to about 4 years, that we don't know the language and what we're learning. There's so much difference in the technology and things that's going on in our society that they can't relate anymore to their grandparents. They can't relate. I think that's kind of a challenge to us, that we have to say, hey, there's a whole lot out there that we can relate to you about. That's why they're getting into drugs and all that, because they can't have any connection with anything. It's a little lonely. It's kind of scary to think that they can't see anything in the older generation. What have we not been telling them? Sharing that.
One of the biggest things out of this, sorry, out of this part of 2 Corinthians that we have to share with the whole world is that everybody is a person, you know, a living being as worthy and as wonderful and as frustrating and everything else as any other living being any place. And it doesn't matter if you're old or young. It doesn't matter if you're ill or well. It does not matter what your IQ is. It does not matter what your job is. Any of that. It doesn't matter what it looks like. Okay? And that's the key thing. And whether you're 72 or if you're 16, that word of hearing that is crucial for life.
But how do you get that to the kids? You know, something that seems, I may be oversimplifying what is a much more complex issue, but it seems that we've accepted, that is, we as lay people, at least parents, and that I'm sure ministers go through the same thing with their family, that our kids go with us kind of through their early years in Sunday school fairly well. We control them. And then all of a sudden they are confirmed, and then we sort of accept kind of a dropout period. But we comfort ourselves by saying, well, when they get married and have their own kids, they're going to come back. But we accept in a lot of our council discussion in that, well, we need to do something to try about this, but you know, it's kind of natural for kids to drop out and they'll be back. And I wonder if it is natural.
Yeah.
Well, I've been thinking of my grandparents. I know one person's story. Why didn't the others ever share their story with me? You know, it's long gone. And I'm thinking, am I doing that with my children? See, they don't know. We're not telling them. Now, I don't mean you tell it uninterestingly. But somehow or other, I think we need to communicate what's happened in our life. How much does your child actually know of your early struggle and when you were that age? I think we're failing to communicate, and that this might be the problem. You're a teacher. What do you think? Are we not communicating to the young?
Well, I've been going to a small mission church. Probably about 30 people in the church. I'm the youngest person in the church. Probably less than a quarter are still employed in the workforce. And I found that it was a good situation, but all of these older people were all grandparent figures to me and really wanted to share with me, but they didn't listen to me.
That's a big difference.
Too busy passing out our wisdom.
Yeah, I think we do it as... And then as far as the younger people going to church and there's a dropout time, I have been active all through college trying to go to church, and several different times I've been in college at, I would go consistently to church every Sunday for that year I was there. And by the end of the year, just as few people would come and greet me and talk to me or let me into their circles. So it is very difficult to go to church. And this is the big one.
That's getting back to that whole issue of making that, you know, the community that really can allow people to be there, whoever they are. Right. Yeah, over here.
I had the experience when my children were growing up of one morning giving one of my sons a lecture on something that had happened on Sunday the day before, something that some of the youth had done. And he looked at me and he says, Mother, you expect us to be mature Christians, and we aren't. And that stopped me. And I think we have this tendency to just, once they're confirmed and theoretically on paper part of the church, to sit back and expect them to know the answers.
There's a couple of things I want to say we need to get going to, and getting back to your question too about the gap between, you know, age 14 and 25 or whatever. I believe that gap is probably important in terms of life struggle, just in terms of being humans in the world. I think most people about 14 or 15 fall into a black hole. You know, we all did it. You know, we all did it to it, and I think, and if we were all straight about our stories about being adolescents, I think we would agree. But the issue here is the nurture of them, and what she's talking about too, as they are. And I firmly believe that if children from infancy are nurtured, and they may not be nurtured well by their parents, so the church may have to step in there, really nurtured well and loved and cared about as people. and all through that, allowed to mature as they are able. I'm all for children communing at whatever age they want to commune. I don't care if they're 2, I don't care if they're 50, whatever, anybody can do that. But I am against saying, okay, all the fifth graders now are going to come to First Communion class, and next Sunday you're all going to take communion. All those 10-year-olds may not be ready to do it, and some of them may have needed to do it back when they were 2.5 and 3, for them. And also with confirmation. You know, we crank them through, and, you know, Lutherans, we shove all this information in their brains for 2 or 3 years. And, you know, and then we give them the seal of approval, and, you know, and then send them to youth conventions once a year for 4 years. And the thing is, with confirmation, too, if you're really going to pay attention to nurturing them as persons, and then you're not going to, it's going to be easy to convince the kids of this. Not that the parents are the hard ones to convince. But and we do this in my parish, and sometimes it's been difficult with parents who just want that, they want that seal of approval. But at the beginning of confirmation, I tell children and parents, this is for your learning and your information. And you're to explore your own relationship with God in this time. If at the end of the time you do not feel able to affirm the promises made for you in your baptism, don't do it. And that is the young person's decision. And no matter what their parents might want at that point, they need to do that. You know, and you tell kids that at the beginning of confirmation, and you would not believe the ways in which all of a sudden they pay attention. Because this is really for me. You know, they're still 13 and 8th graders. You want to throw them out the window half the time. But that's, you know, so you pay attention all the way along to what their... who they are in terms of the faith, that's absolutely crucial. Absolutely crucial. And then, I think, you know, let them fall in the black hole for 6 years, and I believe they will be back. And if even if they're not back, because they know they're welcome, they know it's their place, they know they're comfortable, they know they're nurtured there, they know they have community there, they may not be back in that congregation. And certainly, I believe they will be nurtured in a connection relationship with God, which will be sustaining to them whether or not they're sitting in a wooden pew on Sunday morning. Somebody was going to
stand there.
Back here. Yeah, we've got a there and there. Okay.
I was just going to say real briefly that I think one of the things that we do, and we've spoken a little bit to that, is we do put those teenagers in that period off into the youth group, and we kind of forget about them for that period of time. And I have a son who has been as active, I think, as any child can have been in the church and been involved, and the church has been important to him, and yet he has spoken to that feeling of alienation and feeling that the church and the adults in the church really don't think of the youth as a real part of the church. That it's, you know, they are the youth group, and whatever they want to do is okay, and let them do their own thing. And I think we really do need to include them in with other groups and more meaningfully in the church as a whole.
Okay, up here.
Given the situation that you accurately described, we've begun an experiment that seems to be working pretty well in our parish, using a mentor program in our confirmation, just structurally putting in an intergenerational experience where the kids choose a mentor, somebody in the congregation sort of walks with them and discusses with them matters of personal faith and life. And we've cut down some of the content. Augsburg might not be real pleased with some of the methods we've employed there, but it has worked very well with nurturing intergenerational sort of thing. And this fall, we've plan to include a component where the young people will interview a senior citizen and spend some time discussing church history from the perspective of someone who's lived much of it.
Did you say the young person picks the
Do they get to pick
right?
their mentor?
Right.
Good. That's the key thing. Yeah. Good. The mentor programs don't work if you assign adults to the children.
Sometimes the kids have responsibility and say, oh, I'll just go.
Yeah, pick somebody. Sometimes, if they choose that, though.
Yeah, we encourage them to choose their own, and then a number of them on confirmation Sunday, we'll have their mentors come up and lay hands.
Yeah, which is great. Yeah. That's a real special kind of thing.
Seminary has learned that. They choose the mentor for you. It's called an advisor.
It is, yeah, right. It's called academic advisor. Right, do that too. We need to wind this up here. And I just was noticing that for the most part we've been a bunch of middle-aged people talking about youth and elderly. Not totally. But this is also about all of us. And I think one thing I was thinking about, the big verse, of course, for today would be, we're going back to the scripture. Remember that? The Bible?
Yes.
A few words here? Right. Is in 5:17, which you will keep coming back to over the next 2 days, too. By the way, the schedule's been changed so that tomorrow we'll be doing this and Friday, and text study will be on Saturday. Right, Jerry?
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll keep going here. It says, anyone who is in Christ is a new creation. The old has passed away, and behold, the new has come. And that's a word that comes to us every day because of God's life continually being poured into us and all that by the power of the Spirit. And I hope you all heard that lovely quote from Helen Keller last night at Vespers. That's been something that's been very dear to me for years. And I hope you heard that's a wonderful, there's, of all the things we've been talking about here about the renewal of the treasure and all that, you know, and when she figures out, you know, that water, that those letters mean the stuff pouring over her hand, you know. And did you hear what she says about that? That living word, she says, what's it called? And I can't remember. Anyway, shoot. Ah! Anyway, that living word came. It gave her life. It gave me life, hope, joy, you know. Renewed my life, gave it life, hope, joy, light, hope, joy, and set it free. And out of that freedom of that content, you know, did you hear she goes back, you know, and finds the broken doll, and for the first time experiences repentance and sorrow. You know, that kind of awareness then of the self that allows you to see what's broken out there in the world, or what's decayed even, make the connection, you know, with the brokenness. And then, you know, the wonderful, wonderful contact with just all of a sudden making a life connection from knowing her own self with other people. She said, you know, I learned a great many new words that day. Father, mother, sister, teacher were among them. I can't say this without crying. Words that were to make the world blossom for me like Aaron's rod with flowers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and then she lays in her crib and for the first time longed for a new day to come. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what this is all about, huh? Exactly what this is about. And, you know, talking about a treasure really locked in an earthen vessel would be Helen Keller, you know. But at the same time, being able, you know, out of herself to make that same connection. So, that's all.